talking about AI and all that kind of stuff today, but I like the song Morris wrote for us, and I will get bored with it pretty soon, Morris. Just let me work this through. How are you?
Yeah, I'll wait for you to get it out of your system. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
I went away last week and I got on that, you know, that generator you told me all about. And the good news is, Morris, since you and I last spoke, they've put in another engine that allows you to do naughty words. They didn't last week. It said, I'm sorry, Phil, I cannot do that. But now you can go for it, basically. So, yeah, that was the highlight.
So you found something else to do with time wasting?
Yeah. All my mates have now got special songs written for them. Anyway, how are you, Morris? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, very, very good.
Lovely. I thought that we spend all of our time talking about how it's going to be done. And the simple, simple thing that we haven't really talked about much, both from a medical point of view and the point of view that we're getting tired, is sleep patterns and sleep efficacy and all of the above. I came across an article, I think it's from CNN Health, and they are talking about a way to quit your racing faults and fall asleep. They call it cognitive shuffling. But sleep, Morris, is that an issue that you think somewhere we should be worried about?
Well, worried, I'm not sure, but perhaps I think worrying about it will cause us not to sleep.
Of course, it's not the same.
But it's definitely something we should be concerned about. And it's a fascinating topic, like many, many topics. Mm. It's something, of course, that we know that's built into us innately. No one needs to teach us to close our eyes. Some people need to learn to sleep. But you know, the body does it, needs it, and wants it. Mm. But it's a topic that, despite the fact that for millennials, you know, millions and millions of years we've done it, there hasn't been any really great study into it until the last 10, 15 years or so, where it's become a science. It's literally become a science unto itself, and lots and lots of wonderful researchers and scientists around the world have begun to study sleep, what causes the sleep. It seems so simple, Phil, but it's not, because we do not understand totally why our body shuts down, how it shuts down, how it maintains itself, and how it restarts itself.
See, I don't know the science behind this, Morris, but I think what got me going a little bit about this article was that our daily activities supercharge our senses much more than they ever were before.
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. And one of the analogies I've heard in the last year or two with a couple of researchers is that sleeping is almost like a car wash for the brain.
Okay.
That what it does is it turns the brain off, I mean, not totally, of course, but shuts it down and washes it out from everything that's happened in the day, refreshed for the next day, allows the body to play catch-up, allows our cells to play catch-up, and for us to get ready, which is one of the reasons, I mean, it's simplistic, but one of the reasons when we don't get a good night's sleep, we feel it the next day. Our body literally aches. We are, of course, very tired because we haven't slept, but our cognitive, in other words, not able to think very well. We're a bit lethargic. It's because a group of scientists, and we'll know more over the next years and decades, believe that it is because that car washing effect just didn't take place properly.
Even some of the guys I've talked to here, Chris Watts was very much into sleep, and he had this notion that, I think it's well widely sort of talked about, that between the hours of, say, 2 a.m. and 6, that's when the good stuff happens. So we have to get there.
Yeah, and again, that's a very much used hypothesis. Not saying it's incorrect, because I don't know, but there are a group of people who say that that's not true, and we don't go through different cycles, that there's a different pattern to sleep. And again, neither is right or wrong yet, because nobody can absolutely prove to 100% that's the correct way. But we know that our body does really incredible things that it's not capable of during the day. We just have to be in that sleep state.
I made some reference this morning on my notes to something that was done, apparently, many, 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 many years ago, which was you go to sleep for a bit, you then get up and do your washing or whatever you're doing, you then go back to sleep. That was apparently the norm.
It was. And again, what we're talking about there, I think, is very much pre-industrial revolution, where we seem to follow, and this is anecdotal, of course, but we seem to follow our body a lot more. We let it take the lead. We worked as hard as we needed to. We did what we needed to, went to sleep, woke up. Remember that in those days, making us sound all old, there were very few clocks around. It just didn't exist. The notion of time that we have, that you and I have, of 8 hours of sleep, just wasn't part of the vernacular. We went to sleep pretty much when it was dark. We woke up when it was light. If we had to get up in between, we did, without alarm clocks. Our body's rhythm was very, very different. It was very much, very much centered around the moon, the sun, and what was happening outside.
Do you know that in some civilizations, the idea was turned on its head, and it was, I'm now going to sleep, so it must be whatever o'clock, however it was described. So it came from the other way round.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that still with a lot of professions. You know, when we're talking about shift workers, for instance, they have to change their body clock. And if you, many of them will say that even after doing it for a long period of time, it just feels off kilter. Mm. For those people who are in submarines, I saw a wonderful doco the other week on submarines, living underwater literally for 30, 40 days at a go without coming up at all. And they were talking about how they have to artificially bring all this sleep mechanism, remembering that, again, just quoting from this documentary, there were 300 people on board. Not all 300 people slept at the same time. They used what was called hot bedding, which means three people share a bed. Not in that way, Phil. But literally, one wakes up, gets out of bed, and the next one goes to the same bed, and the same with that third one, 8 hours, you know, 6 hours later, whatever the shifts are. But they had to find ways to convince their body, as distinct from the other 200 that were up and awake, that it was nighttime and that they had to go to sleep for those 5 or 6 hours that they had. It was fascinating, not just about sleep, but about how you live in this world where there is no rhythm that we're used to.
It's interesting, isn't it, how we obviously do need outside, you know, stimulus.
Stimulus or something, yeah.
To make us go to sleep. So that's just glorified shift working. I think it's interesting because obviously Morris likes to talk about what he calls business futurism. So, you know, lots of people can work from wherever they are now. It's no longer work from home even. So that means they can work internationally. They can be talking to people all over the globe, and the gig economy, you know, that's the way forward, as you've always told us. But how much toll is it taking, do you think, on people?
I think it takes a great toll. But if you talk to a shift worker that's done it for sustained periods, if you talk to a nurse or a medico, for instance, that's been doing it for years and years, even though it takes a great toll, it's almost part of their life. It's part of the way that they see the world, they interact with the world. There is some anecdotal evidence that at the other end of their life, perhaps there are a number of years taken off because the body really hasn't been able to regenerate properly, that there are illnesses and things caused because there hasn't been steady sleep patterns. But again, we don't know it to be absolutely true. There's research, you know, there's research that says it is, and just as many research pieces that said it's not true.
Did you get a chance to have a glance at that article I sent you? I don't know what you think about these tips and tricks. This thing's called cognitive shuffling, and it sounds like it takes so much thinking that you're never going to go to sleep, although these guys reckon it works.
So, and this one does. So this was put together by a Dr. Luke Boudouin, B-E-A-U-D-O-I-N, should be pronounced much better than I just did. I've heard this theory before, not to say that he's taken it from anybody, but what the theory is that our mind wakes up and it races. Because there is nothing else for us or for many of us to think about in the middle of the night.
Oh.
So 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock is often seen as the worst period to be waking up in because there's no external stimuli. So your brain just goes automatically to mud. It normally takes us to really not bad places, but you know, negative places, things that are uncertain, unresolved issues, because again, there's no other stimuli to dissuade you from that thought. That's one of the reasons we're told that waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock is difficult, because your mind begins to race to resolve things it hasn't been able to do before, and therefore you're awake.
Okay.
What this guy says, and I've heard this theory before in other ways, is that what we need to do is to distract our mind at that point. Now, we need to remember that our minds, even though we talk about multitasking, in fact, it's not true. Our brain can only do one thing at one time. It can do it very, very quickly and switch between them in milliseconds, and it seems like multitasking.
Oh, I see.
But our brain can only do one thing at a time. That's what this is based on. So what he and other researchers say is based on the fact that we can only really think one thought, if we can sustain that one thought and it is boring enough, which is what he says,
it
puts us back to sleep. So stop thinking about having paid the bills, you know, can't do this, can't get that, I have to do this, have to do all of that, and literally think about sheep. And then, as he says, you take the next word, which is H in the word sheep that you thought about, and you think of heat. And then you take the next letter, which is E, and you think of egg. In other words, you do really distracting, minor, mundane things until you've fallen asleep, because the brain just doesn't have the stimuli.
And then you get to R and you start saying things like rent, and then it's...
Yeah. Or you get to X and you can't think of the word, and then you kept yourself awake all night trying to find the next word.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously some people are much better at thinking like that. Others aren't. Because we're compelled, you know, you feel compelled to like, right, let's get to sleep, let's think about pianos or whatever they're talking about, and then just, you can't help it, can you? Your brain just gets you back to whatever the thing is.
And that's it, really. How do we put our mind back into this state of being able to sleep, you know, being comfortable in sleep, stopping the thought process that keep us awake during the day and should?
And that's normal. I mean, that's under normal circumstances, Maurice. That's stresses and strains that people go through. But I'm actually interested in the fact of how much, you know, our oral senses are being blown up by screens and stuff. I mean, there's all sorts of writing about screen time, but it gets your brain going bananas.
It does. I'm unfortunately not one of those people that buys into that theory in great shovel loads. And the reason for that is because it says that the problem didn't exist 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It talks about teenagers. It talks about people who have mobile phones and media and all that. And I absolutely believe that causes some disconcerting, some harm, some issues around sleeping, because, again, it stimulates us, keeps us awake longer, keeps us thinking longer.
Mm.
But this is a notion that goes back a long way. All we've found is a brand new toy to make it worse.
Okay, so does the 21st century stop us sleeping as good as...
I think it gives us lots more reasons not to sleep.
Mm.
I truly do. I think that, of course, there are all of the things of living in the 21st century, all the stresses of the 21st century, which, of course, was true of every other century as well. But our information overload now, I think, is definitely keeping us awake longer. Before, we could kind of concentrate on one problem as it was forever, because if we were out in the country where we were living and doing stuff, we didn't have news, we didn't have radio. I'm going back 100 years or so and more. So our stimuli was very, very different. Now we are being literally cooked and baked in it all day, and I think that's a problem. Social media, taking it to our bedrooms or wherever it is that's stopping us from sleeping, I think is an issue. But I kind of like this doctor and where he goes and other doctors saying that there is a root cause to all of this. Yes, we should stop the stimuli. Yes, take it out of our bedrooms. Do all those things if we can and we should. But underlying that, there is still an issue perhaps that we need to resolve, and it's not as simplistic as turning the machine off.
I've heard similar things to this, like imagine you're in a room, perhaps from your childhood or something, and you really think that thing through. But, I mean, again, you have to be a certain kind of person to do that. You have to be very patient.
You do, and it doesn't happen on the first instance. I can tell you a trick I use, but not just in sleeping, before I'm going on to a keynote or when I really need some downtime on a plane or something just to detox. There's a particular place that I take my mind to, and I've been doing that forever and ever, and I know that in that place I can get to a restful state quite quickly. I'm not talking about a minute or two, but I know I can get there really quickly, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, if I sustain that single thought and see myself in that single place, which is kind of what this argument, this doctor speaks of, and many other doctors as well. It wasn't a technique that I developed. I was taught it a long, long time ago, and it doesn't always work for me, but I can say 60, 70% of the time, it's pretty good.
Where do you go with, well, it's called autonomous sensory meridian response, ASMR, and that could mean the sound of waves or birds chirping or whatever.
Doesn't work for me. It annoys the hell out of me, but I know it works for a whole lot of other people, and I know it also works for children.
Yeah.
Now, my granddaughter, when she was first born, my kids were told that that's what she should have in her room, that kind of white noise, as it's called. It's called kinds of things, but white noise was how they were told, what the name they were given. And I know, look, do I know, because it was her first attempt at sleep in those months, but it has seemed to make some difference to her in being able to calm her down. Mm-hmm. There was notions of returning to the mother's womb and that kind of noise, mm-hmm. which made me laugh because it was what we were told about my dog 30 years ago when I first had them. You put a clock under its bed when it was first born and came to live with you because that sounding of the heartbeat. But I think there must be something in all of this somewhere.
If, with 2 minutes to go, if we were to try to predict, even loosely, a totally different sleep pattern, how many years ahead, 100 years from now, more than that, what do you think it could be?
I think it is already. I think it's already starting because we are beginning to individualise sleep. We can keep now really good records of our sleep by wearing a smartwatch. We can tell how we snore, how often we turn over, when we wake, when we don't. So we have really good empirical evidence, which we haven't had before, because only those with chronic sleep issues ever went to be tested, because it was days and days of staying at hospital, really difficult stuff. From that intimate knowledge of just how Phil sleeps or just how Morris sleeps or somebody else, we can begin to do sleep prescriptions, which is happening now. And I think over the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years, really that close, we will get really good at sleep prescriptions. I'm not talking about medicines. I'm talking about understanding the body and how the body works best and how you can work with your body to give you much better sleep. That's really knocking on the horizon now.
read something the other day. I don't know if it's nonsense or not, but the good old Japanese are bringing sleep into work culture. So they're sort of giving you nap time in the office because it means that you've really exhausted yourself doing the job. You need to have a kip and then you can wake up and do the job brilliantly. And I saw this picture of all these people crashed out in their office. That could be rubbish.
Power naps became a big thing a while ago too in offices, which is the same thing you've just spoken about, allowing people to take that 10, 15-minute sleep and then come back to work refreshed. I don't know if it worked. It worked for some, I would assume.
Right, I've got to go and crash out for a couple of minutes because it's nearly news time. Thank you, Maurice, as always. I'll talk to you.